Supreme Court and conversion therapy on this edition of Truth and Love. I'm Dale Johnson, and you're listening to Truth and Love, a podcast of the Association of Certified Biblical Counselors, where we seek to provide biblical solutions to the problems that people face. This week on the podcast, I'm delighted to have with me Ed Wildy. He's been a lawyer for 35 years. He's an adjunct professor of law and biblical counseling at the Master's University and an affiliated lawyer with Alliance Defending Freedom. He's also represented ACBC in several amicus briefs before the Supreme Court. And that's exactly what we're wanting to talk about today. Ed, so grateful that you're with us on the podcast, and thanks for your work here, and look forward to talking about this really important case.
Well, thank you very much. I'm happy to talk about it.
Ed, what I want to do is I want us to talk about the Childs versus Salazar. So many people may say, what in the world is that? It is an important case. I think it has potential to be monumental in some ways, but I'm interested to hear your perspective. So before we jump into the case and our assessment of what came down in the Supreme Court decision, what I would love for you to do is to kind of catch us up on the background of this particular case, which deals with the issue of conversion therapy, same-sex orientation, the sexual orientation change effort laws that we see in states and many municipalities. And so that all came to a head in a Supreme Court case. And I want you to give us a little background on this case, Childs versus Salazar.
What happened in Childs versus Salazar is Ms. Childs is a Christian in the state of Colorado with a license to be a clinical therapist. The state of Colorado, like a number of states, had enacted a law which stated that if someone under the age of 18 came to see their therapist, and let's say a young man comes to see the therapist and says, I'm sexually attracted to other men. I don't like this feeling. Will you help me no longer be sexually attracted to another man, or help me to even break, get over a relationship I had with somebody I'm crushed because I had this close relationship with another man? Can you help me get over it? The way the law was written in Colorado and in California and a number of other states, it stated that she would be unable to do anything that might lessen the romantic attraction that he would have towards members of his own sex. There was another aspect of the law, and it stated that if a young girl comes and says, I'm really unhappy with my body, I have this feeling from the things that I'm hearing from my friends or seeing on social media that perhaps I'm really a boy, and I'm torn over changing my body, what we used to call gender dysphoria, at least in the DSM. And if she said, I don't want to have those feelings, again, the therapist, like Ms. Childs, would not be permitted to discourage her or help her get over those feelings. In fact, the state said it would be harmful to this young lady or this young man if you tried to get them to orient away from same-sex attraction or changing their sex. So that's the basic background of it.
Now, that's helpful to us. And I think that brings the relevancy of what we're describing to us as ACBC and to us as biblical counselors, because, from a moral perspective, we're going to address a situation like that, believing that there's a burden of conscience, there's an issue of a desire that's moving in a sinful direction, and that it's something that we need to address, because what's first and foremost is a person having a clean conscience before a holy God, and that's important. That's critical to a person's peace from our religious perspective. Now, if you have states and municipalities that are limiting this concept, we're not talking here. Some people get confused, I think, Ed, sometimes when they think about conversion therapy. That conversion therapy is the extreme concepts that were done by secular psychologists and some Christians, unfortunately, adopted to try and eradicate the concepts of same-sex attraction from individuals. And this would be sometimes quite barbaric things. We would argue that those yes. things were sinful and quite wrong. And so now what's happening is conversion therapy is broadening in its definition, and people are trying to lump any type of sexual orientation change effort. And that would now include, by many secular definitions, that would include our job in wrestling with the issue of sin in a person's heart as to why their conscience is being burdened by this sinful desire of same-sex attraction and so on. So that's how, you know, for us, this is an important issue that has massive implications. So with that in mind, and people knowing and understanding the relevancy, talk us through this case and just how did we get to the Supreme Court? Because a decision has now been made, but there was a process by which I think many people may not realize how our judicial system works. Just give a basic kind of background as to how we got to the pinnacle of the Supreme Court and these arguments are being made and how consequential a decision like this really is. So talk about that just a little bit.
Okay. You're correct. One of the things that happened here was the states changed the definition of conversion therapy to include any sort of discouragement whatsoever. And they made that in terms of harm. So they're actually making a medical and a moral argument. So when people talk about the government should not be involved with morals, they're absolutely always involved with morals. Mm-hmm. That's what their job is, what's good and what's bad. So in Colorado, like a number of other states, a law was passed that limited licensed therapists. And that's one of the reasons that we do not encourage any of our ACBC counselors to obtain a therapy license from the state, because the state now has a significant degree of control over what you may do or not do with that license. When the law was passed in Colorado, Ms. Childs, being a Christian, wanted to challenge the law. You can do something when it comes to a First Amendment case where you can challenge a law before you've been found to have broken the law. Very often, if you want to challenge a law, you have to actually go out and break it. But because speech is so important, people can do something. It's before the enforcement happens. So she comes to court, she files a complaint against Colorado, and she says, I'm not going to tell somebody who comes to me and says, I have gender dysphoria. She's not going to say, well, you must remain in the same body that you were born with. She's not going to say to somebody who says, I'm same-sex attracted, that you may not do it because it's immoral. But if somebody comes to me and says, I want to change my feelings, can you help me? That would be where she runs into difficulty. So she comes to court and she says, I'm going to do things which are going to be contrary to this law. Am I going to get in trouble, or is this law unconstitutional? Does it violate the First Amendment of the United States Constitution? And the trial court came back and said, no, this does not violate the Constitution, because the state isn't regulating what you're saying. The state is only regulating its license. It's just a conduct issue. It's just a license issue. So she loses there. She then goes to the Tenth Circuit, and she loses again. The Tenth Circuit comes back and says, no, this is just regulating conduct. It's a license issue. It's not about speech. It only incidentally affects speech. And the word incidental is important here, because we sometimes use the word incidental to refer to a minor harm. Like, I got into a minor conflict, so I incidentally brushed the wall, you could possibly say, with my car. Mm-hmm. Or it might be we're regulating something else and speech happens to get caught up in it. So if the city makes a law saying that you can't have an outside fire, there's no open flames in city parks, and somebody wants to burn a cross or burn a flag in the city park, that would be speech under the Constitution because it's a communicative act. But the law would only incidentally stop people from burning flags in the park, because there's a law saying nobody can burn anything in the park. So the court finds, the Tenth Circuit says, this is just an incidental infringement on speech. That brings us to the Supreme Court, and that's where ACBC first got involved. The first thing that happens for a case to get to the Supreme Court is you have to get permission. People say all the time, I'm taking this to the Supreme Court. You really don't have any say over that. You have to ask the court for permission. You have to say, my case is so important that you should take it up, because Supreme Courts of a state or the Supreme Court of the United States are a little bit different than other courts. A trial court just says, did you violate the law? The appellate courts will check to make sure that the law was properly followed. They don't really get into facts for a number of reasons. They can, but that's unusual. When it comes to the Supreme Courts, the Supreme Court is saying this is what the law should be for everybody who lives in this area. So the first step in this is asking permission. And that's when we had, it came up. I remember that was with the board meeting where I came in and talked to everybody and explained to them the importance here. And the importance actually showed up in something that the 10th Circuit said in the case. The 10th Circuit said, well, if Ms. Childs has a problem with this particular law, she can just refer this case out to some kind of a religious counselor who can talk to them about this, and somebody who we don't have to worry about the license. Why then would this case even affect us at all? Because we don't have licenses. I know you don't have a license. So they're not talking about us. Well, the state and the courts, the lower court said, what this case is really about is harm. Ms. Childs would harm this young person if she were to say, you shouldn't be, I'll help you get over your homosexual desires. I'll help you get over your gender dysphoria. That's harmful, according to Colorado, according to California. And the court goes, that's harmful. We don't get out of it by saying it's our religion. So I worship Baal of Carthage, and I want to sacrifice my children because I'm having a tough time economically. The government can't go, well, you know, it's your religion, so that's okay. You can't harm people for your religion. So harm actually causes us a lot of danger here, because if it's harmful, then you can't do it, and it doesn't matter why you want to do it. So we went to the Supreme Court. When it comes up to the Supreme Court, when they were asking, can you please help, we filed a brief along with ADF, and we made arguments that were complementary to what the main arguments would be. Because one of the reasons to have an amicus is to expand the number of voices that are being involved there. And so we made arguments in favor of freedom of speech. We did not argue religion at that particular point. And we said, this really is about speech. This is something called viewpoint discrimination. So the states and the courts can't pick out one side of an argument and say, the people who are in favor of sex change are allowed to talk. The people who discourage that are not allowed to speak. Does that make sense so far?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'll just jump in, because I wrote an article several years back warning that I thought this day was coming. And because I knew that this was an angle at which we would see a pressing in to the non-licensed individual, like an ACBC certified counselor. And we've even seen ordinances that have been attempted to be passed, much like what we see to our friends to the north across the border in Canada, is really the attack is going to be, I think, where we become vulnerable in the counseling room for this very argument that you're just describing, that it's an issue of harm, and so we have to set religious distinctions aside. We've already seen the APA in an edited volume make this sort of argument, and it's becoming full fledged. And I think the significance of this Supreme Court decision sort of brought all of that to a head. And what I was grateful to see, and I want you to describe the decision before I move on to the next thing, but I was grateful to see the decision that came down. It did seem as though the concept of religious freedom and liberty won out here. So describe a little bit about the decision, and then I want to ask you a couple of more questions here.
Okay. So we argued first that the Supreme Court should take it because it's viewpoint discrimination. Minors have a right to hear speech. And the court did agree to take it. And when it came up in front of the Supreme Court, the big question then becomes, is this conduct or is this speech? Because the Supreme Court will analyze various laws using different kinds of filters to determine whether the law is okay. If it's conduct and the government is only regulating conduct, it only has to be a good law. It has to make sense. It's not crazy. And it pretty much goes after what they're trying to do. So, you know, here in Los Angeles, we've had horrible fires over the last couple of years. And if the city passes a law saying you can't have outside fires, well, there'd be a good reason for that. And the fact that it might incidentally affect other things, well, we're really afraid of fires here. We don't want to burn down the rest of the city. But if it's speech, it has to be very narrowly tailored. They use the phrase strict scrutiny. In fact, the way the court put it goes, as a general rule, such content-based restrictions trigger strict scrutiny, a demanding standard that requires that the government prove its restriction on speech is narrowly tailored to serve a compelling state interest. And under this test, it is rare that a regulation will ever be permissible. So the real argument is, what kind of filter is the court going to analyze it? Is the court going to see this mostly as speech, or is the court going to see this primarily as regulating a license? And fortunately, the court came down on the side of speech, and they described it this way, just the basic background on speech in the First Amendment. The First Amendment envisions the United States as a rich and complex place where all enjoy the freedom to think as you will and to speak as you think. Oftentimes, speech may prove illuminated and inspiring. Sometimes it may be misguided, offensive, or even cause incalculable grief. But either way, the First Amendment protects the inalienable right of every individual to decide for himself how best to speak. In this nation, no official, high or petty, may command our tongues or silence our voices. So the reason for the First Amendment is to protect unpopular speech. Popular speech will always be on the side of the majority. Popular speech can always get the government to say what you want to say is okay. So it turned out that with the legislature in Colorado and in California, the popular side, the cool kids, were all in favor of no, children should be sterilized, and they should have homosexual relations. And those are good things. And anything that stops that is bad. That doesn't mean everybody thinks that way. It's the unpopular side. And so the court fortunately came down on the unpopular side, which is the real point of the First Amendment. Justice Jackson, this is a good decision because even there's three, which will be termed more liberal justices, and Kagan wrote a concurring opinion saying, yes, this is regulating speech, because if you can regulate speech in one direction, you can regulate speech in the other direction. So Alabama may come down different than Colorado, and Tennessee is going to come down different than California. Neither side gets to regulate speech. Justice Jackson, in what has been rather common, made a dissent of her own. And she was insistent that this was merely conduct and this was a good law. And the rest of the court is very misguided by thinking anything different. So the fact that the court was willing to protect speech is a great thing for us. And they, you are correct. You were the one who actually pointed me at the APA book about the fact that really what they're going after is Christians. It was amazing how unabashedly, the APA went after Christians in that book. And so we did quote a great deal of that with the brief to the Supreme Court.
Well, that's great. And I think it's helpful. So 8-1 decision, the lone dissenter, Justice Jackson. I think it was a good day, because ultimately, I don't think activists are out for the counseling room primarily. I think ultimately what they're out for is the pulpit. Honestly, if I'm just making that argument. So if they can overtake spiritual speech and deem it as unhealthy and harmful and problematic to a person's mental health, I think, you know, and they can deter that in, you know, counseling conversations that happen within a church or outside of a licensed setting, even, because I think that's the train that it was or the tracks that it was going down. Ultimately, you can make that argument in the same vein in public pulpit type speech. So thankfully, we don't have to worry about that, at least in the short term, because I think we were on the track going there pretty quickly. And I think this decision is kind of a big deal. The last question, and honestly, like, I know this is speculation, so I'm going to ask you to do a little bit of speculation. But I am very intrigued as to what's going to happen, because the first law of its kind, like Colorado's law, was, if I remember correctly, it was arranged Senate Bill 1172 in California. And then it started to spread to lots of other states, restricting this action of conversion therapy by licensed professionals, the same type of law that Colorado was trying to enforce here. So the question that I have is, are we going to see states really backing off of this type of regulatory statute? Are we going to see municipalities that have created ordinances against this type of action, or against this type of counsel, trying to regulate this type of counsel? What are we going to see happen? Are the states going to revisit their statutes and remove it now? Are we going to see case law continue to build that really is more protective of spiritual speech in the counseling room? Like, what do you think is going to happen?
They are not going to retreat from what they're doing. Unfortunately, they're not. They're doing this and they believe they're on a moral crusade, and the people who have a different opinion are bad guys and are hurting people. In fact, while the Childs case was pending, Colorado passed something called the Kelly Loving Act. There are laws like that coming up in California and other places. And these laws are saying, if a parent says to the child, my second grader comes home and says, I learned at school that I'm really a girl. They're saying, no, we can, that's harmful. And if there's a custody dispute between divorced parents, the parent who is affirming the gender dysphoria will be the one that the state has to favor. So they're not backing down at all. They actually expanded it to go after parental rights, saying that the child really belongs to the state and we, legislature, know what is morally and spiritually good. This is much more a religious and philosophical dispute than it is a straight legal dispute. And they are going to keep going at it. And you brought up the phrase mental health, which is something that we as ACBC counselors should be very careful of using, because health raises the question of harm, and it sets us into an area where the state has a right to regulate. Before we went on, we were both talking about, we don't know what the word mental health means. Mm-hmm. Is it something wrong with your body? Well, if it's something wrong with your body, you go see a doctor. We have no problems with people seeing physicians. Absolutely. And I tell my students oftentimes, you should send a great many of your people to the doctor to find out if their body's okay. Because what happens with our body is going to affect how we think and feel oftentimes. Is it just a bad way of thinking? Well, it has, like, all anxiety or all depression, all feeling bad or concerned is always a bad thing. So getting rid of the feeling is the only thing that's important. Well, we'd say, like, you might need to repent. There are situations that, you know, Psalm 32, a guilty conscience may cause me an issue. Mm-hmm. The state goes, no, a guilty conscience is a bad thing. Another thing we're talking about, how this is really kind of a stripped down version of Freud. And I know we don't have time for it, and this is not the right kind of forum, but Philip Reif's discussion about Freud and how Freudian psychology creates a sort of anti-culture is the kind of thinking that actually lies underneath these laws. It really is a religious issue. It's a question about, can God decide what is good or bad, or do my feelings right now, if I'm 10 or if I'm 30, decide what is good or bad? And a bad feeling is a bad thing.
Yeah, it's unhealthy.
And what causes a bad feeling is always bad.
Yeah, that's right. It becomes something that's unhealthy. This, I think, helps us to frame the discussion moving forward, where we can celebrate the Lord's kindness in this decision. But I think we also have to be cautious to say the terminology is going to change a little bit. So just to keep our eyes open, they're going to be using the concept of health and harm. They're going to be using that distinction, that divide. And for us to be faithful and to clearly understand that the way that we see people and understand people and what's most healthy for them is directly related to how they see themselves before a holy God. And that's really critical. It's the practice of our religion. And we'll continue to do that no matter what the state decides. However, we can rejoice when we see things like this happen. And we pray that sanity prevails, really, in this progress moving forward. And thanks for following this. Thanks for helping to represent ACBC and speak on our behalf in this amicus brief. We've done this a couple of times, and you guys have been really, really helpful in us pursuing this. So I want to say publicly thank you to you for your work here and helping us to have a voice even at that level.
Well, I appreciate it. And it's really an honor to get to help you. It's, for a long time, doing First Amendment work was always on the side of less reputable kinds of speech. And we've now changed so much as a country that trying to say things that would have been considered rational and sane 30 years ago are now criminal in some places. So it's really an honor to get to represent ACBC. And I'm thankful that you've trusted me to be able to do this. I really am.
Well, thanks for recounting the story. And I just want to give everybody an update because these things are consequential. Even though they're talking about licensed state regulations, they could be very consequential even for us in the biblical counseling room at our church. And we just have to continue to pay attention to this. Ed's one of those guys who helps us to do that. So thank you, brother, for your time. And hopefully today was helpful for us.
Well, thank you again.
You're listening to Truth and Love, a podcast of ACBC. As we've mentioned several times, this is Mental Health Awareness Month. And as always, we like to provide helpful resources that discern with a biblical lens many of the popular ideologies surrounding mental health. And we have a resource page linked in the show notes that's dedicated to many podcasts that we've done over the years regarding this topic of the constructs of mental health. And this resource includes topics on many popular diagnoses like anxiety, depression, OCD, schizophrenia, ADHD. We've covered several therapeutic approaches such as cognitive behavioral therapy, emotionally focused therapy, EMDR, trauma-informed therapy, all things that you're hearing at a popular level today. So I hope these resources and the ones that we continue to add to this page prove helpful to you as you seek to discern these issues through a biblical lens. Now, as always, you can look for more resources just like what I've mentioned here and that we talked about on the podcast today at our website, biblicalcounseling.com.